It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sheree and Peter.
Hello, and welcome to our audience of the CPG Guys podcast. And I'm Sheree, one of the CPG Guys, along with my co-host, Peter Bond. And I love to work on the media, overall e-commerce, supply chain, D2C, commercial. And I want to remind all of you to find all our content on the cpgguys.com, cpgguys.com. And when you get a chance, as you have consistently been doing, give us feedback so we know how to shape the show and which guests we need to bring on the show. And how you do that is by going to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys. I'd also like to remind you that we actually have an Instagram channel. Now, Peter and I started the Instagram channel for fun, but that's how we communicate with you now in terms of all the wonderful guests we've had in the past 65 episodes deep at this stage. And you can find every single week, there's one or two clips we put out there from our previous guests from those 65 episodes. And we make sure to put an episode number. So you can always go to the Apple Podcast by simply opening up your podcast app on your iPhone, or one of the 20 various platforms we have, but just by navigating to the episode number. And I'd love to welcome my co-host, the man of consumer centricity. He loves customer and consumer insights, and he's known for loyalty, including a 6-foot-long register receipt that he founded. He's also known as Mr. Bond, or in other words, PVSP. Welcome.
Sri, how you doing? Wow. It is such a great time, and I'm not just saying that because we are just weeks away from pitchers and catchers. Yes, the Yankees-Dodgers rivalry will continue.
Except the Yankees this year have a new set of arms as Masahiro Tanaka returns back to Japan after a wonderful 8 years he gave us with an ERA across those 8 years of 3.33 and a playoff ERA in the 3.5 range as well. So, Tanaka.
I'm sorry, Sri. I didn't hear any of that because I was too busy admiring my World Series championship trophy.
Peter loves this. Peter loves to admire the one that he has, and I sit back and admire the 28th that we've had the blessed fortune.
Old news. Guess who's the champion? Sorry you have to go through this, Darnley, but
28-1.
You know what else I'm excited about? About Founders Series. We've had some really interesting conversations with people who've started their own businesses. And I know today is going to be just as exciting, if not even more. So I can't wait to get to our guest.
And how about that? Speaking of guests, we just had my daughter walk right in the back when there's 10 feet up in front.
We had a cameo appearance in the Rajagopalan household. I love it.
And speaking of guests, our guest might actually know my younger daughter, Lara, who walked in the past. So I'd love to welcome to the show Darnley Merzier, the president and founder of Merzier Process Group, who actually works with the U.S. government. And I'd love for you to give us a brief introduction of who you are and what you do with Merzier Process Group.
Sure, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here. As Sri said, I am Darnley Merzier, founder of Merzier Process Group. Merzier Process Group is a federal government contracting firm specializing in health information technology. And I founded the company back in 2008. So that's essentially what we focus in is federal government technology. So we specialize more in the federal government. So we don't do any work with state or local government. So it's just mainly federal government. Yes.
That's very helpful.
Gotcha. So let's jump right into the questions, Darnley. And the first one is a very simple one for you, which is, you know, take us through the journey of how Darnley really got into why process improvement and why federal government's contractor. I mean, you could have chosen to do 4 million things on planet Earth.
I could have, certainly, that's true. So my personal journey as the founder of Merzier Process Group, MPG, goes way back into my career in consulting, my career as a program manager, a business process engineer within the insurance industry. So what I did is when I started the company, I was thinking more of, you know, what am I interested in doing? What am I interested in working in? And since business process improvement solutions was an interest of mine, I thought it only made sense to try to go and help the government as opposed to just really doing anything else. I like improving things. I like finding solutions. So for me, it was all about how can I actually help somebody or a company or an organization do better in terms of their business. So again, I started the company like looking in terms of and the federal, just to take a step back, the federal government has a lot of improvements, needs a lot of improvement. And as a leader in business process improvement solutions, then it only made sense to just try to navigate that industry as opposed to navigating any other industry. On the commercial side, you really truly have to have a large network. But on the government side, it's if you're already in it doing the consulting, then it only makes sense to continue in that path. So my objective was mainly to help in terms of process improvements for IT solutions. So big modernization projects, IT modernization, IT transformation. So that's really what my interest lies in. And I just decided to pursue it.
Thank you for that, Darnley, and welcome to the show. When I think of the U.S. government, I think of all of these different departments or bureaus, and that immediately makes me think of the famous term, overused term, bureaucracy. Bureaucracy typically comes with it a tremendous amount of detailed process. And in being able to follow that process, you probably have to generate a tremendous amount of patience on your part to secure contracts. Is that true? And how do you navigate and work with the government in order to find this? It must be very challenging for you.
No, absolutely. That's a great question, Peter. So when you're looking at the government and how to actually get into the work, the crux of the work that needs to be done and understand the bureaucracy, the bureaucratic issues and deal with them, it's all about networking. It's all about building relationships. It's all about knowing what agencies need help. And throughout my career, I've made it a purpose of networking with the right people within the industry and really understanding the agencies that I wanted to do business in. So as you said, there's a slew of agencies, bureaus, and departments, and so on and so forth that you can deal with. So it was narrowing down to what agencies do I think that my services, my business would benefit the most. So the Department of Veterans Affairs is one of our clients. The Department of, so we do also work with the agencies such as the Department of Defense and so on and so forth. So as subcontractors to other larger firms. So it's a little, essentially you have to build a mentor protege sort of relationship, be part of an incubator program or network with the small business offices within those agencies to build those relationships. Great. Did that answer your question, Peter?
Yes.
It did, very much, Charlie. So I have a curiosity question that arose from that. You mentioned being a subcontractor, but are you also a direct contractor with the U.S. federal government?
Well, not quite yet. We haven't won a prime contract as of yet, but we are in the middle of bidding for prime contracts. It is a journey. So when you talk about journeying through the process, right now we are mainly a subcontractor and we're trying to shift into becoming a prime contractor where we have direct access to the government. So yes, gotcha. We're bidding on those contracts.
Congratulations to you for getting that far and actually bidding directly as well. So I know in our conversations in the past, Darnley, you mentioned you're from Haiti. And how did you choose to move to the United States and why from Haiti? And has the journey, since you've been in the United States quite a while now, has the journey been anything like what you anticipated when you first came to the United States?
I was very young when I came here to the States, meaning young, I came here to study. I came here to attend school. So I spent, I came here to attend college. So I went from Haiti to going to school in Vermont. So I went to do my undergraduate in Rutland, Vermont, and then moved on to do my master's in Newport, Rhode Island. So when I came into this country, it was just a purpose of studying. I had all the intentions in the world of going back to Haiti. I didn't speak English when I came in. I actually navigated through that process with the help of amazing folks at the college that I attended for my undergraduate school. So it was very supportive, a very supportive community. I've made some lifelong friends within that particular community, which was, you know, to me, they now are family to me. But that said, everything changed because, like I said, my intent was to study and go back to Haiti and fix Haiti's problems. I have a master's in international relations. So I've studied politics as an undergraduate student. So it's it was all about how can I actually just finish my schooling and then go back home. But eventually everything changed because I did fall in love with the United States and the United States way of being. You know, I wanted to, I saw all the opportunities that people who come from all over the world have. And I wanted to be part of that. And I wanted to do that. So I decided that I was going to stay and work. And I worked mainly in the financial services industry and the insurance industry. So, but now I love it. I absolutely love it. I wouldn't live anywhere else at this point in time.
Wow, so, that's terrific, Darnley. That's very exciting. So you came here, you got your education. By the way, when you said you went to Vermont and then you were in Newport, Rhode Island, and then Veterans Affairs, I immediately thought, did she go to the Naval War College? But no, I know I'm a Rhode Island grad, a former resident. I know you went to Salve Regina. So
yes,
good on you.
Yes, exactly. I went to Salve Regina, but I interacted with a lot of Naval War College folks because they come into Salve to get their international relations background.
Brilliant.
So it was really good to, you know, just interconnect with them.
So I want to get into since it is Founders Quarter, rather, and we are talking to founders of businesses, let's get into the DNA of what essentially you have, which is you started it up. I want to understand particularly what were some of the key components of being able to do that successfully, particularly around growth, like finding those revenue generating opportunities. Are there some hacks that you can share with our audience around how you found these subcontracting opportunities and how you start establishing the credibility to be bidding on these opportunities yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So, in order to find opportunity, there are multiple ways to find opportunities. And I think everyone has a story and everyone has their own particular story that they want to share. For me in particular, since I actually was a consultant within the federal space, I had a network. I had the credibility as an independent consultant that I had formed with various people. So they knew who I was. They knew that I had the ability to do the work. And they invited me to actually, they recommended that I start my own company. They recommended that I actually move forward and build it up. So they were available to help me through the process. So when I decided to start the company, I actually had a couple of prime contractors who wanted to do business with me in the first place. So upon that, I built upon just those relationships, build the past performance, and was able to get additional work and move up in terms of building the company from a one person to from a one person me gig to an 11-person company. And now we are at a different stage where, again, as I mentioned, we're going for bigger revenue. We are looking to prime opportunities, given that we have the past performance. I've built a new partnership with my new business partner, Carlene Jarrett, who is the service disabled veteran. And she actually, so she helped us move the company into becoming a woman-owned, from a woman-owned company to an SDVOSB and woman-owned company. So we have a lot of designations, a lot of just attributes that will help us get additional work and be able to grow. So in terms of where you do actually find the work, there are some tricks and tools of the trade. You do have to network. You do also have to buy some business development platforms. And so that will help you, like, in terms of identifying work, qualifying them, and then, you know, engaging in different agencies to pursue them. And then the other trick also, I would say, which is most important, is building a direct relationship with those agencies. Because if I didn't have the relationship with those, with the Department of Veterans Affairs, I would not have been able to be a subcontractor for the VA for the last 11 years. As a woman, to be a subcontractor within a military setting or an agency that typically requires, not requires, but that typically prefers to do
favors, yeah.
It favors veterans, and to be able to sustain a business in that agency for the last 11, 12 years has been phenomenal. So that's something that I'm super proud of.
So Darlie, you mentioned an acronym in there for the benefit of our listeners. What is SDVOSB, you said?
The SDVOSB, which is a Service Disabled Veteran Owned Business.
Thank you for clarifying.
What we have done is we have become now, because Carlene is a service disabled veteran owned, my business partner, a veteran, she's a service disabled veteran. Now we can qualify the company as a service disabled veteran owned firm. So we have, it's easier for us as a service disabled veteran owned firm to do business with the federal government, especially the VA, as opposed to simply being a woman owned small business.
Okay.
How awesome is that, Peter? And so Darlie, I'd love to get into your actual business.
Sure.
So could you just give us a quick list of, and also for the benefit of our listeners, what are the different services you actually offer the U.S. federal government? Because when we say process improvement, that could actually mean a lot. And then secondly, not just the services, but how do you match that up to what's really available for you to work on or by finding contracts? Like, how do you find these?
Sure, absolutely. Sri, that's an excellent question, because business process improvement, it's not necessarily about the business process improvement, but it's about the customer experience. And what is the customer experience? Well, it is what we focus on is IT. We focus on IT modernization. We focus on IT transformation. And IT, when I say IT modernization, is what is a technology that the federal government have that needs to, how does it need to move forward? How can we innovate it? So it's not the technology driving the business, but the business driving the technology. So what do you...
And Darlie, these technologies you speak to, do you get to actually validate what those are to be able to say, are they modern, they aren't, they need to change, things of that nature for process improvement?
Absolutely. So you're looking at it from soup to nuts. You're looking at it from, you know, the business standpoint. So the first thing is evaluating the business, evaluating the strategic direction of the business, the organization. So let me just give you an example. So let's say you were working on a particular agency. Let's say, just for the point of this example, choose the Department of Justice. So the Department of Justice has different bureaus, right? So you want to make sure that you understand what those individual organizations are within the DOJ are responsible for, and you want to know, you know, how, if you need to actually bring Microsoft products, does it really make sense to bring Microsoft products to that particular organization? What is that going to serve? So we have to ask those questions. We have to understand who the stakeholders are. Yeah. We have to understand the business architecture. We have to also understand the IT architecture and the infrastructure, the data that is required, the security principles that we need to apply, the methodologies that we need to use, and so on and so forth, to be able to make sure that we are serving the customer in the right way, that, you know, they're not just going to decide, oh, you know what, we're going to go and get those Apple products that we're never going to use, you know. So it's looking at the cost benefit analysis, the we call them also analysis of alternatives, to find out, you know, what exactly do you need to identify, why would you want this system versus that system? And then do all of the virtualizations to understand, to simulate that the business is truly going to benefit from them. So it's all about the customer experience. It's all about the business experience, the user experience, and making it work for them.
Sri, you know, it sounds to me a lot like what we deal with in terms of the marketing tech stack at brands and retailers, having to understand what they've invested in so that when we come in and talk to people about what they should be considering in terms of solutions, that the most judicious and appropriate solutions are recommended. So it's good to hear that we're not the only ones that deal with this kind of stuff. Darnley, when you start thinking about delivering the actual work to your government client, how do you go about resourcing and staffing and managing a team? And how much do you balance between you actually owning the strategic work and how far down that goes? And is it hard to delegate some of those responsibilities?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that, because there are multiple steps to it, and I could spend days talking about it. But just to summarize it, you actually have, as a subcontractor, we essentially have partner with other companies, the prime. Yeah. So we come in as a team and we say, here's the team and we're going to bid on this contract. So you actually have to bid on a contract, and we're bidding we found this particular opportunity. We're bidding on it and as a team, and we are, and the prime contractor is deciding, you know, Mercier is going to own this particular section of the work. So given that, if let's say we're owning portfolio management, so therefore we're just going to look for portfolio management resources to be able to support the work in case that we win, because we want to be prepared for the government to say, oh, team ABC has won, and now we have to, we don't wait until the last minute to staff the work. We actually go and find those resources. As far as managing the work myself, it depends. If there are opportunities for certain deliverables, for certain projects and contracts that we are invited to join at a later time that did not require us to bid on the contract, we still do have to hire. In the past, when we were super small, I did most of the work myself, and I actually just it's cost effective, no overhead, nothing. Just I'm the project manager, I'm the contract manager, I'm also the business development manager, and so on and so forth. But right now, we just don't operate that way, because we needed to define a structure to make sure that the government respects us and understand that we have all the quality controls that are necessary to support like a larger contract.
I have a curiosity question in that space. How do you staff your organization? Where do you find people from? Are you constantly looking? Do they just come to you? Are they ex-government employees? Like, how does this happen?
It's a combination of, it's through a whole lot of networking. I truly believe in relying on networking. I believe in the community of LinkedIn. And also we do have a career builder account where we get resources. We also have a partner company that we go through for larger contracts. But there are multiple resources to find staff, but mainly if it's a smaller opportunity or a smaller contract where we just need one or two full-time employees, we do actually go to the route first of networking.
So listening to you speak, Darnley, I've now learned that your partner is also female, and it's a female entrepreneur-owned business at the end of the day. Working with the government, is this harder to do as a female entrepreneur? Is it easier to do? Or it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. You're just focused on entrepreneurship.
I think it's a combination of working through some agencies, you know, some of the more male-dominated agencies. It's a little bit more difficult. So I would say more military male-dominated agencies, it's going to definitely be more challenging. But a lot of women have penetrated that space. There's a lot of federal contractors that are women-owned small businesses that are doing phenomenal work in terms of information technology and bringing innovation to the table. So I think that we actually have shattered the glass ceiling when it comes to that particular space. And for both of us, it's really, we feel like really good in the space that we are. We obviously have some challenges at times, but we manage them. And again, we're super proud to have been supporting some federal agencies for the last 12 years in the capacity that we have been able to do it.
Darnley, I want to try to bring this full circle to our audience as I ask the last question. We have a lot of consumer packaged goods people from brands and retailers and service providers in that space. And many of them may not realize how important the federal government is in terms of these kinds of products, not just products that are sold to service members through AFIS or DECA. And Sri, I know you're going to want me to define those. So that's Air Force, Army Exchange, and the Defense Commissary Agency. Mm-hmm. I bet you didn't know that I'm a military brat. My grandfather was a rear admiral. But in any event, I do know a little bit about this. But they may sell to the government through distributors. And if you think about it, not only are they available for sale in those retail stores, but think of all the buildings the government has. Well, they got to be cleaned and they need cleaning products. Mm-hmm. They're probably soda machines and they're probably coffee machines. And now you start thinking about all of these products. So getting into the government and being able to sell, they can be a very important client to you. So my question to you is, how can people listening to this podcast think about identifying those kinds of opportunities? Where can they go find them? Generally speaking, what are the best tools to go find those? And even particularly in your case, where there are services being provided, just being able to promote your services, making these entities aware of what you have available so that they can consider you in the bidding process.
Sure, absolutely. So first of all, in order to find us, they can actually go into our website. So we have at www.merzyprocessgroup.com. We actually delineate the specific services that we offer in terms of information technology, specifically in program management, risk management, as well as development. DevSecOps is one of the areas that we're starting to focus on, and human-centered design. But in terms of, you know, how do you actually find those opportunities within the federal space, you can actually just go into what used to be called FedBizOps. And that's where you gather, you get all of the new opportunities that are coming through. Now, if you're every federal contractor has to be registered through a portal called SAM. And so if you actually are doing business with the federal government and you're looking for a federal vendor, you can find Mercier Process Group, MPG, through SAM. And also another way of finding it would be to go to register with the OSDBOOs. The OSDBOOs are the small business offices within each and every single federal agency. So we
learn how to pronounce that. OSDBOOs?
OSDBOOs.
OSDBOOs.
OSDBOO.
To our audience, we are going to, after the call, talk to Darnley, get the actual URLs of all these in the correct pronunciation. We will put them in the liner notes. So don't worry.
Oh, good.
You don't have to keep replaying this. We will provide that to you. But that's extremely helpful.
OSDBOOs to me might have originally indicated some sort of whale in the Pacific Ocean.
There you go.
Right.
Well, I think this is great. And to particularly to our audience from emerging and nascent brands, what I heard you say is that there are entities within each department that enable them to have a fighting chance of selling to the government. So that if you are you're an emerging brand, you just created a D2C product and you think you want to sell to the federal government because there's a need, wow, that sounds like a really great way to help you get your business off the ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would encourage anyone who is starting their business, who's saying, you know what, I think I am going to start a federal contracting company in it because I want to sell services and products to the federal government. First, register in SAM. And the second thing is identify the agencies that you want to do business with and make some connections. Go to register within those agencies. They have small business offices where you can actually go talk to folks who are super, super helpful. And then also the Small Business Administration. The SBA is extremely helpful in connecting you to various mentors and establishing mentor protege programs and so on and so forth. So go for it. I mean, there are tools, there are resources, there are invaluable resources to get going.
That's very kind of you to transparently share for the benefit of others like yourself, startups and other companies, to truly understand where they can look for opportunities. I truly believe that is very kind of you. So thank you for doing that. What a great conversation, Peter. And I think very kind of you to stop by today and chat with us. But I want to remind our audience that you can find all our content. It's easy. This is the CPG Guys podcast, and it's called cpgguys.com. Pretty straightforward.
Imagine that.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
And I want to also remind our audience that in the first quarter of 2021, when we run this episode, we decided to not just make January Founders Month, but from here go forward, we will be bringing handful of founders, not just to move forward their business, but also so we can spread this spirit of living, growing, and benefiting from each other and participating in the overall growth and transformation of industries in general. And that's what Peter and Michael has always been from day one when we started this. Darnley, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you enjoyed having this conversation with us as well.
I did greatly. And, you know, sure enough, if you have anyone that is asking questions and they would like me to address them, I'll be happy to do that. I'm on LinkedIn also.
We'll put your LinkedIn profile embedded in the liner notes as well. So that's great.
Excellent.
That is very generous of you to offer help. And Peter, as always, a pleasure doing these with you.
Sri, this was so fascinating. I learned a tremendous amount. I'm excited to be able to say to all these small brands that approach us, have you ever considered the government? And if you have you ever thought of these ways to help accelerate your ability to sell into that? This is just tremendous. Thank you.
Most importantly, Peter, I now know what is not a whale in the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, that is true. We got acronyms today. Oh boy.
Right, exactly.
And as Peter has mentioned, those will be in the liner notes of this episode. I can't thank all of you for listening in, for the love you've shown Peter and me. This podcast is for you. Please do let us know what you feel about it. Straightforward, ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys to tell us what content you'd like us to focus on. And with that, we will see you again Monday.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.